Dennis McCrell's tenure with the Count Basie Orchestra had two stints. In 1983, he was the last drummer hired by the legendary pianist and bandleader before his death a year later. After leaving the orchestra in 1987, McCrell returned to New York and became the drummer of choice for a large number of ensembles, including the American Jazz Orchestra and the Dizzy Gillespie All-Star Big Band. In 2010, he returned to the Count Basie Orchestra as its leader and chief conductor until 2013. He's currently a professor at Queens College in Flushing, New York. McCrell is the featured artist at the 2018 Illinois State University Jazz Festival tonight and tomorrow. Via Skype from his home in New York, he says his parents indoctrinated him into jazz at a very young age.
Yeah. I can't understate the importance of parents that really were very supportive. And because especially when I was growing up, you know, nowadays we take jazz for granted because you've got YouTube and, you know, you can kind of get anything you want. But when I was growing up, you know, there were some places with good radio, and they might play, like it might be a college station that would play jazz like late at night or something like that. But it wasn't very easy to, you know, be a young kid and have access to the music. So my mother, who was, she was really an organ fan. She loved like Jimmy Smith and all the Hammond B3 guys. She loved that stuff. Cool. She recognized that I was very drawn to the music. And she just did anything she could do to get me close to it. She used to take me to jazz clubs. Let me back up a bit. We were in a military family, so we traveled around a lot. So a lot of, you know, in major cities, that wasn't necessarily as difficult as it became when we lived in places like Anchorage, Alaska. But she, wherever we were, she would find if there was anything that was happening musically, and she would, you know, make sure that I was exposed to it.
It was in Las Vegas where you met the great singer Joe Williams. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
And that was your entry point into the Count Basie band?
Yes. All of the great things I've been blessed with, they were always, it was older musicians or just people who loved the music and took an interest in younger people. And Joe, who lived in Las Vegas, he loved the band, like at UNLV. He used to just come by and sometimes just listen to the rehearsals because he just liked the band. And he was the first one to recommended me to Basie.
So he came by the school and watched you guys rehearse?
Well, at that time, I was working on the Vegas Strip doing production shows and, you know, just doing whatever gigs, you know, I could do. But again, Joe, sometimes he would come to our concerts and just be in the audience. And the nice thing, and I have to also give a great deal of credit to our band director at the time, his name was Frank Gagliardi, who was a percussionist at the Hilton Hotel. He was on the Vegas Strip. And so in addition to being a great educator, he also, you know, was one of the cats who knew all the other musicians. And there was really a very informal feeling. So a lot of great players would just come by, just check out the band. There was one concert where Joe was in the audience, and I guess Frank asked him, listen, would you mind being our MC? So he just walked up and started introducing everybody. And, you know, it was that casual.
How cool is that?
He just loved hanging out, and he just loved being around the music.
So you entered into the Basie band, but didn't Freddie Green basically run the band at that time when you were in it?
No. When I joined the band, it was in January of 83. This was Basie, and Basie was still alive. Basie is the one who hired me. Freddie's role in the band pretty much was as most people saw. He was kind of the silent partner. He didn't say much. A silent partner in terms of he wasn't very verbal, but his presence was very strongly felt. But Basie ran the band to the end.
What was your relationship with Freddie Green in the band?
Freddie was great. He was like a drill sergeant. In a way, the way I like to describe the two of them, they were a great team. If Basie would be considered the good cop, Freddie was the bad cop. He was kind of the one who set the standard of the band. I mean, he was the one who kept the bar high, and he was tough. You know, at first when I joined the band, it was really difficult because he made it very, very clear that, you know, this is what we're doing and this is how we play and this is what you're going to do. And as a drummer, it was very unusual for me because the role of the drummer is primarily the timekeeper. That's kind of what we're indoctrinated or kind of trained to do.
Sure.
And in that band, that was just not that responsibility was his and not mine. So it was very humbling, but at the same time, you know, anytime anyone introduces you to a new concept or even something that is humbling, it allows you to kind of learn. Huh. One analogy I like to give about Freddie, if you've ever seen that movie, An Officer and a Gentleman, with Richard Gere and Louis Gossett Jr.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Freddie was like that. Freddie was like the drill sergeant. But in a way, like the Marines, sometimes they kind of break you down to build you up. And I will always be grateful to him, because he, without a doubt, made me a stronger player.
Drummer, band leader, songwriter, educator Dennis McCrell is joining us on GLT Sound Ideas. He's at ISU this week talking and playing with the ISU Jazz students. He's also featured at the ISU Jazz Festival this weekend. Do students you encounter today still have a romantic notion of jazz as it was, say, back in the 1950s?
The first thing is that when you talk about romantic notions, I think that's something that you would feel would come from people who are young and idealistic, which, you know, which hopefully students are. I'm a believer that I would never have, you know, followed my dream if I wasn't idealistic, and I encourage that. I will say that I think as the music has changed and matured, you know, students now are so sharp. Most of the students that I run into are so much just more together than I was when I was their age, you know. And so they're not wide-eyed in terms of being completely naive and in the dark. I mean, I think they recognize the difficulties of being a professional at anything, but they also seem to be much more well prepared. You know, they recognize that, like I say, there are things that they need to have together, and they take care of business and do what they have to do.
You know, there's been a lot of talk over even decades now about how jazz is in decline, jazz is dead, you know, things like that. But still, even if that's true, which I'm not sure how you feel about that, but a jazz education can still be a good foundation for a musician, right? Even if they don't stay with jazz music professionally.
Yes, I'd like to say something. First of all, the main thing I hope to do when I come is to, this is a word I use, and I have to thank, again, Freddie Green, you know, is to hopefully give them a better concept of what it is. The reason I say this is because even right now, the way you kind of just asked that question, everyone assumes that jazz is on the decline and music is going down. It's harder and harder to get paid and all that stuff. And there is truth in some of that, but truth is kind of three-dimensional. There's plenty of work, and there is plenty, and getting paid is not difficult. It just depends on who you work for, number one. You know, when I travel, and I travel all over the world, I'm amazed at how many young people are playing. They're playing great. They're making opportunities for themselves. I think what's happening is that our concept of jazz as it has been shaped by the music industry, which in fact has gone through a major change.
What do you mean by that?
I mean in terms of, for example, what you found in terms of like the last, say, like 30 years with the introduction of digital technology and streaming and things like that, a lot of the structures in the music business that we used to have have changed. We don't get music necessarily always from the radio or from recordings. Now you hear it on the internet. Used to be even getting a record contract, that was like what everyone, when I was in school, you all wanted to have your recording contract so you can record and get your music out. You know, nowadays, anybody with a Mac, you know, or a decent computer can record and record well and get your music out. And I'll give you an example. One of my favorite artists at the moment is a young guy in England. His name is Jacob Collier. And he pretty much is somebody who, I don't even know whether he actually has an official recording contract or even records for a label. And yet most people know him because of YouTube and because of recordings he's made in his home. Herbie Hancock is one of his biggest fans. He's a good example of how the technology and how music has changed and the business has changed. You can still do great things. So I hope that one of the main things I tell students and all people is, you know, this is not a time of gloom and doom. This is a good time. It's just we have to always kind of keep changing our we just have to up our game and realize that things have changed and try to go with it.